All right. Well, welcome, everybody. Thank you for coming. I'm happy that you don't have too many new people tonight, because if you had new people with me speaking, they would never come back. But here we are tonight. And we have a presentation for you talking about connected car and safety products. Those are the kind of the new things, as just said very clearly. My name is John Haynes. I have a stack of business cards there. I do not have a title on my business card by choice. I'm not really a title guy, but if you had a title, that would be it, an EVP. So I report to the president of the company and to our board of directors and run that operation. Allen Edds founded back in 1954. This is the original Figueroa store back in the day, and there were no other companies back then that were selling any kind of car electronics. As a matter of fact, the cars back in the 50s were delivered, and I know all of you are too young to know this, but were delivered really with no radios and sometimes no air conditioning, and that was always done aftermarket at a mechanic shop. They would order the parts and put them in the car. The car companies used to say back then, we build cars, not electronics, and made that an aftermarket concept. So there was an Al, and there was an Ed, and they got together and opened up a store that put in radios and air conditioners and did upholstery and that kind of stuff, and that grew into a multi-store chain. Ed passed away many years ago. Al's still alive, but retired. Excuse me. But that's the original store. So that store is no longer around, but we have many others in Southern California. So I think I just did all this. See? I just talk, you know. A lot of firsts, by the way. Allen Edds Auto Sound is known in our industry of bringing concepts and products to market. First company to start putting rear deck speakers in a car. As a matter of fact, the first company to put two speakers in a car. Some, the cars back in the day used to have a single mono speaker in the dashboard, and then Al or Ed decided it sounded good to have some in the back, so they started putting them in the back. First car amplifier to make the music louder and more clear. First car subwoofers, adding bass to the car like your home audio system in the car. We do that still today. And first car alarms back in the day. I mean, it made a lot of sense to me. You buy a brand new car, and the first thing you do is drill a 3/4-inch hole in the driver's door to put the switch in. I don't think we would do that today. Fast forward to more recent times, first company to bring iPod integration to let people play their iPod in their car. And first Bluetooth hands-free kits. When Bluetooth first came out, it was a technology that not too many people knew about. It was sold mostly online directly to consumers, and we were the first chain to kind of embrace that and offer it as a retail item, and still going strong today. So I'll show you some things out of our archives. I took some pictures. That's the type of radio that used to be installed, so that the cars would come with a provision in the dashboard for radio, but didn't have a radio. So this is the kind of radios that were put in, obviously just an AM tuner back from the 50s. And there's the first one of the first 8-track tape players that we went to the beach with and listened to surf music. First car alarm, and there used to be all the banks and stuff used to have the red bell outside, and if you remember, it was called Ains, A-N-E-S, would be labeled on the bell, and the A and the E in the company Ains is the Allen. Yeah, and they had two other partners. Making burglar alarms for banks and other institutions, as well as making car alarms. And in this case, what you do is literally drill a hole in the door and put a key switch in, and that was all hardwired. Of course, today that wouldn't work because you yank it out and twist some wires together and the car alarm's bypassed. But if you're a collector of classic cars like I am, I've bought a number over the years. Often you'll raise the hood of the car and see one of these bells underneath the hood. That is a portable, well, the first, really, it's the first music changer, like a CD changer, except this is record player. So this mounted under the rear deck of the car, and you put a stack of records, actually loaded them from the bottom, and they would drop down onto a spindle and play while you were driving, and then the next record would play, and so on, until you're out of records. And they said that CDs skipped. This is probably much worse. First CD changer, Sony introduced that back in the back in the 80s, and first mobile phone, right? Brought that to market too. And first radar detector, which to me is incredibly important because I tend to drive a little quickly sometimes. So much for history, but those are some things that we get. We have an archive in our offices. You know, we have these things kind of remind us of where we came from. But let's talk about what we're doing today. So the topic of the presentation today is not to talk about music and that kind of stuff, although, you know, we have a Q&A period at the end. I'm happy to talk about it. I'm actually a huge believer in improving the audio system in cars. Not everybody subscribes, but I do. And we're going to talk today about the connected car and how it interfaces with your life. And we're also going to talk about the safer car. Right now, in our industry, one of the biggest growth areas that's exploding right now is vehicle safety. It's something that people want. They learn about it. They see it on new cars. And actually, we were actually in this business quite a while before new cars started providing it. But it was when new cars started providing these things that it kind of validated it, and people realized that these are real products, you know. So we were selling backup cameras or reverse safety cameras long before they came on cars. And we were selling reverse parking sensors long before they came on cars. So it kind of makes it all come back around, and it's a big part of our growth right now. I'm sorry for the coughing. A little dry out where I live in Santa Clarita. We have winds blowing out there, and I get scratchy throat. So, no thanks, I'm good. I'm just going to keep coughing through the presentation, but thank you. So let's talk about the connected car first. Back in October of 2001, a revolutionary item hit the market. And prior to that, there were all kinds of portable music devices with tapes and CDs and so on and so forth. But Apple introduced a product called the iPod. And this was really the very first easy to use, easy to understand, basically a portable hard drive, where people could store all their music. Everybody knows what an iPod is, but that goes back to 2001. And the first thing that people wanted to do was to be able to take the music on their iPod, and they wanted to listen to it while they were driving. But there's no way to do that. So every car back then had CD changer options. It was a DIN cable that plugged into the back of the radio. And so what we did is we went to Apple stores. We bought the 30-pin iPod cable. We bought CD changer cables. We cut them, we spliced them, and put a micro switch on the dashboard. So you literally would flip the switch, and the music would come out of the iPod into the CD changer, and would actually play your iPod in your car, which is what we called it, iPod Your Car. And we were the first company to do that, and there were no pre-made products for a year and a half at least that were on the market. Nobody made one. And then pretty soon, one manufacturer, another manufacturer, and now there's dozens and dozens of solutions to play your iPhone or iPod in your car. Who knows what the first smartphone was? Yeah, because it's actually called a smartphone. It was dubbed a smartphone, first one on the market. I was gonna talk about the iPhone, but I knew somebody in this group would call me out on it if I didn't have this there. It was introduced by IBM. It was called Simon, and it was a very basic phone. It functioned as a phone. You could also send faxes. It had some built-in apps. Pretty basic stuff. But that was the first smartphone. It's not the one we think about, but that was on the market. I just didn't want to get a hand that came up and said, John, the iPhone really wasn't the first smartphone. It was really the Simon. So I put that in there. So what I want to talk about, though, in June 2009 is that Apple introduced the iPhone, and this was really the first phone that we really all considered what we call a smartphone, you know, today. June 2009, first high-def color screen, portable phone, built-in apps that you could use. There was no app store back then. This was stuff that all came loaded on the phone. And every once in a while, when they did a software update, you might get some more apps that you could use. And then eventually the app store opened, and you could download what you wanted. And today, 237 million people are owning and operating smartphones in the U.S. So that's a lot of people out there with these portable devices. You can debate whether they're evil or good. You can debate whether people spend too much time on them with or not. But regardless, they exist and they're part of our lives. So the question then becomes, since you spend so much time in your car, and since people have these devices, and they're going to use these devices, some people use them a lot, some people use them a little, but we all use them. Excuse me. The question is, how do you do it safely? Because you see in this picture here, this gentleman is looking down at his phone, and even though it's illegal in the state of California to hold a phone in your hand while you're driving, I'm sure all of us have looked around and seen people on their phones while they're driving, right? So I did a little bit of an experiment. I just kind of looked at my phone a few times and kind of counted off, you know, for a basic operation, maybe just to grab a phone number or something like that. And I was averaging about 3 seconds, you know, of gathering data off my phone. So if I take my eyes off the road for 3 seconds at really a nominal speed of 35 miles per hour, my car drives about half the length of a football field in the 3 seconds that I'm just, you know, glancing just for a second. Well, there's a lot of stuff that can happen in 50 yards. And even though it's 35 miles an hour in the example that I showed, there's a lot of collisions, people, bicycles, trees, dogs, cats that, you know, can pop in front of a car when your eyes are not where they're supposed to be. As a matter of fact, distracted driving, we'll talk about that in a little bit. The California Highway Patrol defines distracted driving as anything that takes your mind off driving. So whether you're adjusting the knob on your radio or whether you're eating a hamburger or putting makeup on, just turning to have a conversation in the car, any time that you're not focused down the road driving your vehicle, that's considered distracted driving.
And
I would never look at one of those ever. But so the number is that when you're driving down the road, roughly 60 to 65% of the people that are immediately around your vehicle are driving distracted at any moment. Because very, very few people are just eyes down the road all the time, you know, hands at, you know, 9 and 3 o'clock on the wheel and driving down the road. On Friday and Saturday nights, when drinking really comes in, it goes as high as 85%. So there's a lot of people aren't paying attention. And how do we as an industry and car manufacturers, given the fact that they are going to use the phone, you can legislate it out, you can talk about it, but they're going to do it, how do you make it safer for everybody? So we used to talk about Bluetooth hands-free in the car. We used to talk about, this is an iPhone interface or iPod interface, so your phone, you don't have to touch your phone while you use it, play music, whatever. But what happened 2 years ago, maybe a little bit more, was a software platform was introduced by Apple, and that really kind of is what we talk about today. And what they did was they introduced a software platform that they call CarPlay. And they launched this with Honda and BMW, I think, were the first two partners, and then it spread to a number of vehicles. I'll show you that in a bit. But Apple CarPlay is not a product in terms of a device or hardware. It's a software platform, and it's designed to make the iPhone safer and easier to use while you're driving. The fact that this has been adopted by the OEs, original equipment manufacturers, and those car manufacturers, kind of validates this. This has all been vetted out, and it's kind of been agreed upon that this is way safer than using your phone in your hand. So what Apple CarPlay does, it provides you with mapping. It also provides you with music. I'm sorry, that's a phone. You can listen to talk to people on the phone, hands-free. Text messages. You can text while you're driving. Yeah, this does text-to-speech, so it reads your messages to you, and you can respond with voice-to-text, so you never actually touch the radio. You're communicating. You can send messages, receive messages by voice. Or you can simply mute that out. It also has built-in responses, like I'm driving out, you know, don't want to talk to you, or talk to you later. It also handles music play, so all the music that's stored on your iPhone or streaming, you can play that on your stereo as well. So that is Apple CarPlay. It's a software platform, and it is on tons of cars. It also allows you to get a bunch of different apps that can be done in your car as well. So whether it's Spotify for music, Pandora, whether it's a Sirius XM radio, there's all kinds here, iHeart, on and on. Good, even iBooks, you want to have books read to you while you're driving. These are all apps that are available for use from the touchscreen of your dashboard. And like all touchscreen products, some are limited. So when you're driving, you're not allowed to do some things. If the car is parked in with the parking brake set, other things become available to you. So you're not really allowed to like search around apps, but you know, you can select apps when you're not moving and then use them on the road. So as far as I told you, the two car manufacturers, Honda and BMW, were the first two that embraced CarPlay. One more fly I want to tell you about. One of the disadvantages people hated about CarPlay when it first came out was your mapping was Apple Maps. And now they've increased that, so you can use Apple Maps, or now you have a choice of using Google Maps or Waze, which is probably one of the most popular for most people, and Baidu, which is another navigation mapping software. So now you have a choice of how you want to use your mapping. So we used to sell quite a bit of embedded navigation product for people that wanted to get around with navigation. Then people were using their phones for navigating. And so they were, you could buy clips to put them up on the dashboard or clip into your vent or whatever, and using a really very small screen on the telephone and trying to use that screen as a mapping guide. I don't know how long it takes to see where you're on a phone, probably 5 seconds. But now by having this built on the big screen of your dashboard, it's just like an OE navigation. It's much easier to use. So car brands that are now offering CarPlay on all or some of their models, some of them you may not recognize because they're global brands, not U.S. brands. But there's one screen, and then we have yet another screen. And believe it or not, one more screen. So Apple CarPlay is available. It's not an option. It comes, on whatever trim level of the car, on all these car manufacturers. And that is basically replacing the navigation software, the music software that the OEs used to put in. It's now really all been done through Apple CarPlay. But what if you're one of the 260-some million cars on the market that don't have CarPlay, and you really don't want to buy a new car because you like the one that you have? And guess what? The aftermarket, which is what we sell, it came through. So companies like Alpine Electronics, who, by the way, has a really close connection with Apple because they build most of the radios for Honda, Jaguar, General Motors, Audi. So they, in Japan, their factory there manufactures the OE radios for the manufacturers. So their aftermarket version, then, of course, Kenwood Electronics came out with a version, and these are radios that can be put in almost any car, and Pioneer Electronics, same thing. So you say, wow, there's an Alpine, there's a Kenwood, there's a Pioneer. Why do they look the same? Well, because they're running the same software. It's all CarPlay. So although some of these radios have options to do something else besides CarPlay, on the Kenwood and the Pioneer, the CarPlay is a software platform that's the same whether you buy an Audi, whether you buy a Honda, whether you buy a Ferrari, or an Alpine, a Kenwood, or a Pioneer, you all get CarPlay. And it works exactly the same, and all the apps are available, and it functions exactly the same. Every manufacturer that wants to offer CarPlay has to go through about a year-long certification process with Apple, which, by the way, is like one of the worst companies to do business with. It's a great company, by the way, but they're just terrible to do business with. Year-long, at least, project to get your product certified to make sure that CarPlay functions exactly the way Apple wants it to function. And if it doesn't, they don't certify it. So CarPlay on a Ferrari and CarPlay on this Kenwood, same CarPlay. This is what you can add to your own car. So if you add a car, let's say you buy a new car and it has CarPlay. But you have another one in the driveway that doesn't have CarPlay and you'd like to add it, this is something that you can do. Pricing on these things range, anywhere from, $500 to $1,000 in that range, depending on what other features are on the deck. Is it a 6.2-inch screen or a 7-inch screen? Yeah, question.
I've got a 17 Subaru.
Well, any of these systems here are what are called double DIN. DIN is a German standard for radio installations. So you have a single DIN, double DIN. These are all double DINs. So almost virtually every car on the road, including all Subarus, have installation kits that allow these to be replace the factory radio that's in the car. So they're plastic kits. So, you know, if your hole's an oval hole, there's going to be a plastic kit that's oval with a square DIN, you know, in the middle for the installer to add the radio to. Alpine, Kenwood, Pioneer, JVC, which I didn't show, also Jensen. There's probably a dozen manufacturers that make a CarPlay aftermarket replacement deck. So your radio would come out, this radio would go in, and now you have, first of all, a better radio than what the factory puts in just by the nature of the beast, and also you'd pick up CarPlay. Yeah. No, there's no subscription charge to CarPlay at all. And just like on your smartphone, all the apps are free, you know, for the most part. I mean, there are some pay apps, you know, same on your phone. So, you know, those apps on your phone carry through to the CarPlay deck. So you're, no, there's no charge for CarPlay. It's just it's a platform. It's an arrangement that Apple put together with the OEs, obviously, to get Apple into the car, right? As a family, you know, the next generation, it's just building Apple family. But there's no charge for the CarPlay. CarPlay is just a platform that's put on the radio.
What's the price range?
That's right. I got your question first. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to talk about that in a second. So I'm going to stage that when you had a question.
What's the price range of these kits installed?
Install price probably like somewhere between $700 and $1,200 installed. So you know, and the $700 one. It's going to function CarPlay just as well as the $1,200 one. The screen size might be a little smaller, and there might be some other features that are not on those units, but basically the CarPlay is going to function the same. Every CarPlay has to function exactly the same. So it doesn't matter if you... Pardon me?
They're all touch screens.
They're all touch screens, correct. So, like, what's the difference, all right? So on a $600 radio, it might be a 6.2-inch diameter touch screen. On a $1,200 radio, it might be a 7-inch capacitive touch glass-fronted screen. That's so it's exactly like your tablet or your iPhone. So you're paying for better screen quality, but the Apple CarPlay function itself will be the same for everything that's CarPlay. There's no difference. No, we can install CarPlay in any car that's on the road. You know, so it's basically the installation for almost every vehicle is pretty straightforward. Every once in a while, you get a vehicle that's a little more challenging. The guys have to figure out how to do the mounting or make it work. But for almost every car, there's a ready available adapters and kits for it. Yep. No, CarPlay is not Bluetooth. So you plug your phone in. On all the OEs, you plug the phone in. Okay. So it's going to charge the phone and also makes the connection to the phone. On some of the new aftermarket pieces, CarPlay is wireless. So you can keep your phone in your purse, pocket, briefcase, you know, whatever, and you'll still be able to operate the CarPlay. But that no OE right now has wireless. It's just one aftermarket company. So now there's one. I want to show one screen separate. This is a beautiful, beautiful radio. This is Alpine Electronics. This is they call it this Halo piece. This is a 9-inch screen that basically kind of floats over the front of the dash. And this can be installed in virtually any car. And you're looking here, you know, probably about $800 for this radio. But this is a really nice, big, beautiful 9-inch screen. The bigger the screen, we call it real estate, the more real estate that's on the dash, the easier it is to operate. Smaller things are, you know, you've got bumps in the road and things like that. So the bigger things are, the easier it is to use. So we have OE CarPlay. That's a big advancement in using your smartphone in the car. And then now there's also aftermarket CarPlay radios. Now for a gentleman that asked about iPhones, yes, CarPlay and iPhones are joined at the hip. It's an Apple product. But hey, guess what? Google, which is a lot of your other smartphones that are out there, they have a similar product called Android Auto. And Android Auto basically does the same thing. So what these do, they both allow you to have mapping. Obviously, Android Auto is going to use Google Maps since that's their product. It also will handle your text, voice to text, text to voice. It'll handle your phone calls hands-free and will also handle all your music playback and other apps. So Google has Android Auto and Apple offers CarPlay. CarPlay is by far the most recognized. I don't want to insult any Android platform owners here. There are more Android platform phones in the marketplace than iOS or Apple phones. But every free phone, every $99 special, every buy one, get one free phone are all Android platforms. So if you want to look at how many smartphones are in the market where people are actually using them for apps and texts and emails and that kind of stuff, then iOS just kills it. Just Apple's the product. I'm not saying it's better or worse. I'm just saying in terms of the market, they just have it covered. So, you know, a Galaxy phone, S5, S7, beautiful phones, an iPhone 10, iPhone 8, beautiful phones. It really is personal preference at that point. But if you want to look at how many platforms are in the market that people are using smartphones, it's really just an Apple world. And that's why all the manufacturers went. Now, some of the manufacturers will do both Android Auto and CarPlay. And some of the aftermarket radios that I showed, the Kenwood and the Pioneer, will do Android Auto and CarPlay. So if you plug in an Android-based phone, it's going to be Android Auto. If you plug in an iPhone, it'll be CarPlay. So it's either one. Same vehicle. So you could have, let's say one member of the family has an iPhone, another member of the family has an S7. Both of them will be able to use the same type of software. They're just from different companies. Okay? So, you can only have one phone plugged in at a time, but let's say you had two different phones in the family or trading off driving. So it doesn't leave your Android family member out. They'll be using Android Auto. So on some of the OEs, okay, let's make the separation between what comes from the factory. Not too many of them do both. But on the aftermarket, a lot of them do both. So, because there's a lot of customers that have Android-based phones. So this does Google Maps, handles your phone calls, text messages, and music playback, same as CarPlay. It's called Android Auto, and this is what handles the... And instead of going to the App Store, you go to the Google Toy Store or you know their App Store. So the apps will be lots of times the same, sometimes different, depends on you know what's available. But whether you're an Android user or an iPhone user, either one's good. What is that? Well, since I'm talking about connection with your phone in your car, this is actually a picture from a Toyota Tundra pickup truck, but this is available in a lot of different vehicles. Who knows how to pronounce that? Nope. Good guess, though. Qi. So Qi is now become the universal accepted wireless charging platform. So whether you're doing home charging on your desk or whatever, if you're going to do wireless charging, this is now the accepted standard worldwide. And it's called Qi. And quite frankly, I don't know how you get Qi out of letters Q and I, but you do. So it's called Qi. And we sell that aftermarket too. So this is basically something that we can install in cars, or sometimes it comes from the factory, just like this one did. Now, the phone has to be adapted for Qi charging. So almost all the Android phones, all the smartphones, come with Qi charging built in. iPhone did not do it until the iPhone 8. Once the iPhone 8 hit, they had Qi charging. It was built into the phone, so the 8 and the 10 do. But if you have an iPhone prior to that, you actually have to buy an adapter that goes inside your case of your phone to be able to charge it. But in a case like this, you would just take your phone and throw it on the pad, and it would charge your phone, you know, without any connection, you know, whatsoever. And the pad keeps it from sliding around. So there's another way to connect your phone to your car. Well, they do, actually. So there's a company out there called Skosche, which is S-C-O-S-C-H-E, and they make a wide variety of phone holders, adapters that basically mount your phone on the dash, and they have many items that have wireless Qi charging built in. So you just have to shop for the PC you want, and some people like that, some people don't, but it's definitely available to do, sure. So anyway, so that's the connected car. That's how you basically take that phone that we seem to be connected to. I was having a conversation with Roger earlier. He mentioned he was in a restaurant, and everybody was heads down looking at their phone. My wife and I see that all the time. We actually have caught ourselves texting to each other, my wife and I, sitting on the same couch. And like, you know, I'll get a message from her, like something that happened on TV, or maybe somebody sent something to her, and like we're just like 3 feet apart, but we're like, you know, texting back and forth. So anyway, it's part of our lives. Next thing I wanted to talk about, any questions on connected before I move on? Yep.
How does AM radio fit in?
Well, AM radio actually it still has reason to be. And the reason to be typically is going to be sports talk as well as talk show type radio. As a music function, it's really a decrepit device. It just doesn't work very well. Every car today and for the last, 20, 30 years has had AM or FM, and typically everybody uses FM for music and AM for talk. Today, the reality is, go back up, there we go. The reality is that Sirius satellite radio is basically the number two subscription platform in the U.S. Most of the people that are listening to music are using Sirius XM because it's a digital FM quality, CD quality, so it doesn't have fades and dropouts and that kind of stuff. AM is pretty much terrible to listen to. But sometimes it has content on it. I got you a second. Has content on it that's interesting to people. Now, many stations are doing what's called HD radio, which is a secondary broadcast that the radio station does that broadcasts the same AM information, but in a more FM-like sound quality, because it's also a digital transmission. So it doesn't suffer from the same kind of clicks and pops and buzzes and dropouts that AM radio does. So I have one in the back, and then I'll get you. Go ahead. Right. If you don't have your phone with you, then it's not doing anything. Yeah, well, I mean, it has AM, FM radio built in. I mean, it's not like it doesn't work at all, but as far as using CarPlay, yeah, without a phone, it doesn't work. And the other thing that's interesting, you'll find I can guarantee, with every new car that was built in 2017, 18, and beyond, you will not find a CD player in the car anymore. You can order it as an option. It's still available as an option that you have to get from the car dealer, but they don't manufacture them with any CD slot anymore at all. Nobody uses them. Everybody's using their phone or other methods to get music. Yeah, without your phone, CarPlay requires the iPhone to work, and Android Auto requires the Android phone to work. So they're connected together, hence connected car. Yeah. Right. That's called RG tagging. So now what's happening when FM or many times AM or HD, certainly HD radio, they're broadcasting not just the music or the content, they're also broadcasting data. And the data is going to be maybe the artist that's playing or the name of the album or the name of the song. And as a matter of fact, on some radios, you're actually able to capture that. And in CarPlay, CarPlay definitely allows you to do this, that if you hear a song that you like, you can basically save it to your phone and then purchase it from, purchase it from the Apple apps or the iTunes store. So there's a lot of data and information that's flowing around now compared to, even 5 years ago. So good point. Anything else on connected car? And I'll move on to safety. Yeah. So, good question. The question was, what if you have a bunch of CDs and cassettes and you want to play them in your car? Well, if you have a portable cassette player, and by the way, cassettes are still popular for people in the recording industry that are recording music and they're just doing stuff on the fly. You can still, in a professional recording studio, they still have cassette recorders there, to put tracks down that they can listen to someplace else. You would have to, for cassettes, you would have to find a portable cassette player. And then you would have to use the headphone jack on that cassette player and go into an auxiliary input on your car radio, which most of them have, and they can be added. On the CDs, brand new product just introduced this year, which is a USB CD player. And so it's a universal piece. Every car today on the road comes with a USB input, and you're able to take this device and plug it into the USB, and then you'll have CD playback directly through the car radio, because cars today just don't come with CDs. I have a large CD collection. I burned almost all of them to my digital devices, but I still have them. I can't play them. Yep. Right, of course, but nobody's made a cassette. Nobody's made an aftermarket cassette player now for 4 years. So there are no aftermarket cassette players anymore. So you're just kind of, you know, it's good you bought the backup. It was good thinking because you bought something that's not available anymore. You know, cassettes, we all own them. We've all had them. They're just done. I mean, you know, as a method of holding music, burn them onto your computer, throw them away because, you know, you're never going to really be able to use them too much longer. So. Yep. I don't know. What do you do all day? So, well, I understand that, but I mean, I have a thousand record albums, and you know, I'm still in the process of burning them. But yeah, I said, what it is, I just do a couple a week, and you know, eventually they get done. So I had a hand up over here someplace. I'm sorry, I lost you. No, we're good. Okay. All right. So let's move on to the safe cars. There's a car, and here's something that every single car has. It doesn't matter what car it is, but you own it. And it's called a blind zone. And if you look in your rearview mirror, or if you even look over your shoulder and look out the back window of your car, because eyesight is linear, it doesn't bend, and because you have an end of a trunk or the bottom of the rearview window, you can't see through your car. So there's an area behind your car that's 15 to 25 feet that you cannot see. Even when you think you see, like you're looking over your shoulder, everything looks great, you can't see. And we have, unfortunately, over 250 deaths every year and 13,000 injuries from what they call backover or rollover accidents. That's where somebody backs up over somebody. Most are children under the age of 5. So a child that is 1 or 2 years old, that's just starting to walk, for example, you know, there's a lot of tendencies that they have. They tend to follow. So when you say, hey, you know, if they're in the front yard and you say goodbye, they want to tend to follow. They also don't have any concept of spatial recognition, how close they are to something. They don't understand the speed and impact of a slow-moving car. They don't get guidelines like stay off the driveway. They're at that age. They just go, right? And so there's a tremendous amount of unfortunate deaths and carnage that come from people backing over. What's heartbreaking is that 70% of the people that back over a child is going to be the parent or guardian themselves. And that would be terrible to do, right? Shorter drivers, bigger blind spot, because the lower you are in the car, the further back that zone goes. 60% of the back overs are going to be trucks and SUVs because they're higher off the ground. That blind zone is even further. So next time that you get in your car, do it in the daylight, not tonight, because you want to be able to see. Take a look out your back window and make note of what you can see. And then get out of your car and look at what you're looking at and look at all the area that you couldn't see. Because there could be anything there. Could be a garbage can. Could be a planter. Could be a child. Could be a cat. Could be a dog. Whatever. But you can't see. And so there's a front zone too. Like when you look over the hood of your car, you can't see straight down. You don't know what's right in front of your car. So these are all things that we learn while we're driving to anticipate and look around, but you just don't really know. So the solution to that, and it's actually mandated by federal law now, that cars starting in 2018, I think they moved it to 2019, every car on the road under 10,000 pound gross vehicle weight, which is basically any cars and trucks, will have to have a reverse safety camera. But we've been actually selling these for many, many years, and they can be added to any vehicle. This is just one example of what one looks like. You see them sometimes like little cubes. Sometimes they're mounted directly on a license plate frame. Lots of ways to do them. But basically what they do is they provide, and also backup sensors, I'm sorry to jump ahead. These are the four little discs that you see sometimes in the bumper of a car. And there are ultrasonic sensors that will basically notify the driver through beeping and sometimes a visual indicator if they're about to hit something. So this is where, you know, that goes beep, 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 beep. When it's on like the loud beep, you're about ready to hit something. So that also gives you a clue if something's behind your vehicle. But the cameras, obviously, you can see. Yep. So the prices of the cameras range from like $99 to the highest, $149, something like that. Installation typically another $100 or so. So you do need, I'm going to go over the way to see it in a second, so it depends on the car. But the camera itself is not very expensive. And if you think like a one-time investment on a car of installing a backup camera versus what it can do for you, to me, it's like a no-brainer, and it is mandated on all new cars to have this device put in. And I will tell you from experience, my wife has a relatively new, like a one-year-old Dodge Journey, an SUV. I have a two-year-old Optima Turbo outside. The cameras that the manufacturer puts in the car are nowhere near as good as the ones we would put in. I'm talking about the resolution of the camera itself, not the screen. The screen's fine, but the actual camera resolution. Car manufacturers, when they're mandated to do something, they'll do it, but they're not necessarily going to do it the most expensive way. They'll just do what they have to do. So typically that's what a backup camera display would look something like that. I mean, you'll see behind the car. So when you the first thing you do, you're supposed to look around, make sure it's safe around you, throw the car in reverse, take a glance down at your screen, you can see exactly from the bumper and beyond, what's there. So if there's anything there that would cause damage to you, somebody else, you'd be able to not, back over them. So the ways you actually see that in your car, there's different ways. If the car has already a monitor, it's built into the dash as part of the design of the car. There are interfaces that allow the backup camera to be played through the factory monitor that's already there. And these cameras come on automatically when the car is put into reverse, and it goes back to normal when the car is taken out of reverse. So you don't even have to think about it. It's just when you go into reverse. If you don't have a vehicle that has a monitor like this, it can be a little bit smaller than that. That's just one example I showed. You can actually buy a small monitor that mounts on the dashboard. These are pretty inexpensive, $129, $149-ish. It's a color monitor. They make them, this one happens to be a 5-inch screen. They make them as small as 4.3, as big as 7. But this basically is a way to look at your backup camera if you don't have this built-in monitor into the dashboard. We'll talk about blind spots in a second. This is called a blind zone. There's words for this. They call this a blind zone. So this is the whole area behind your car you can't see when you're backing up. And there is a front zone, and we do sell front cameras. So you can buy a front camera as well. So, that is switched on with a little switch so you can see what's in front of your car. And, there are a lot of cars, especially if you drive exotics that, have these curbs that you pull into the parking space, they can do a lot of damage it's not when you back over them, it's when you back out. They can cause a lot of damage to spoilers and valances, but anyway. And the other way is a rear view monitor, that you can actually replace your rear view mirror. And this is a factory grade glass, and built into that mirror is, a monitor that you can see. So anyway, I'm going to just grab a chair real fast. No, I don't want to take your chair. Okay, thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks very much. Yeah, I'm getting a little bit lazy, but I started this morning at 5:30, so all right. So we talked about blind spots. So again, the blind spot has a definition. So the National Highway Transportation Safety Commission defines the blind spot as the area behind your car that you can't see using the mirrors of your car. So your rearview mirror is looking out your back window. You can't see through the car on either side. And unless your mirrors are adjusted perfectly, typically you're not going to see that area right here where there's no coverage in blue. That's called the blind spot. And so if there's a car driving there or a motorcycle or whatever, you can't see it. You can look in your rearview mirror. You can look in your side mirror. Everything looks good. You go to change lanes, all of a sudden you find out there's a vehicle there or a motorcyclist or something, and that's called blind spot. A lot of accidents happen that way. So what you can do, again, these are things that manufacturers sell. If you buy a Mercedes-Benz, if you buy an Audi, BMW, Cadillac, lots of cars, these will be on there already. And those mount actually under the bumper. You don't see these at all. And these are blind spot detector sensors. And so what that sensor is doing, it's not looking to the side of the car. It doesn't look behind the car. It's only looking at the blind spot area. And it gives you an alert. Now, usually there's going to be a light that mounts on the little pillars of the vehicle, the windshield pillars, that will light up and tell you every time there's something in the blind spot area. And then if you turn your blinker on to change lanes, once it sees that your blinker's on and there's something in the blind spot, it'll give you an audible warning as well. So you can maybe not change lanes into somebody that's already there. The other way that you can handle this, and Honda was the first company to come out with it, was to do blind spot cameras. And they started with one only on the driver's side, and then eventually added one on the passenger side. And again, this is a product that we sell. So we sell both the blind spot detection sensors, and we also sell blind spot detection cameras. So if you have a camera, obviously you have to have, like with the reverse camera, some kind of a monitor in the car that can be used, whether it's in the dashboard or you do one on the top of the dash or do one in the mirrors. But blind spot cameras, basically, when you turn your signal on, then the image comes up so you can see what's in that area that you can't see in your mirror. So these are safety items, basically, to avoid accidents. So blind spot detection sensors or blind spot detection cameras, they're not mutually exclusive. You could add both if you wanted to. Most people do one or the other. Wow. We don't want to do that, right? So I'm going to end up the safe car topic with probably the most advanced technological device that's come in many, many years, and it's to avoid exactly what you see here, accidents. So let's do some stats. Again, these are compiled by the National Highway Transportation and Safety Administration. Only 3% of accidents are deemed to be caused by human error. So in other words, somebody just turns a wheel, does something stupid, and you know runs into something. A mechanical just screwed up and hit something. 3%. It's not very many. 80% of the crashes. And 65% of near crashes, or close calls, are caused by drivers' inattention within 3 seconds prior to the event. So what's inattention? We defined it earlier. Looking at your radio, looking at somebody you're having a conversation with in the car. People put on makeup while they're driving. They read books. I've seen this I drive to LA every day. People reading magazines on the, you know, propped on the steering wheel. Anything that's not eyeball focused ahead is inattentive driving, as well as talking on a phone or texting, the things that are in the news all the time. So, 40% of all rear-end collisions, people don't even put on the brakes. They just run into something. Well, why would they run into something? Because they didn't see it. They didn't realize that something had stopped in front of them because they were looking in the wrong direction or drowsing off or for whatever reason, but they just ran into something, 40% of them. Most rear-end collisions would be avoided if the driver had only 1 second of warning that something was about to happen. So for the person that's, you know, dropped a candy bar and they're picking it up, if they had a warning during that time that they're picking up the candy bar, they're likely not going to hit what they're about to hit, right? 60% of the fatalities are caused by people that drift out of their lane. So they'll either drift into oncoming traffic, which is bad for two people, or they're going to drift off the road into a ditch or a fence or something, but they're basically going to leave their lane unintentionally. And that can be from becoming drowsy and falling asleep at the wheel. It could be, again, not paying attention to what you're doing. You're looking at something, picking something up, turning a dial, whatever. Excuse me. And the car drifts out of the lane. So this is kind of what causes most of the accidents. So here's some numbers. 35 miles an hour, your car will go 41 feet in 1 second. 45 miles an hour, 66 feet. What's 66 feet? That's the property face of most California's typical, you know, ranch-style homes. Usually their property face is about 60 feet. So if you look at one full house in 1 second, again, as we go faster, the distance obviously gets greater. How fast you go, 65, 95 feet. At 75 miles an hour, which is often many of the freeway speeds around here, 110 feet. What does 110 feet look like? Wingspan of a 737 is 110 feet, and that's for 1 second. So you can see that if you had 1 second notice that something was happening, it actually gives you a lot of distance at whatever speed to stop. As a matter of fact, the following distance rule, if you remember, used to be one car length for every 10 miles per hour. Well, how do you decide that? The current standard is 1 second for every 10 miles per hour. So they want to have a second, 1 second for every 10 miles an hour. 70 miles an hour should be 7 seconds. And that gives you the distance that's necessary to be safe. So a company called Mobileye came out, and if you remember back to the original Gulf War, this kind of stuff was on the news. Excuse me. I'm going to be okay. It was on the news every night because they would show bridges being blown up and buildings being blown up and whatever, and you would see this little targeting crosshair that was on a building or a bridge or something, and oftentimes it would even be a little box, especially if it was a moving object like a truck or something like that. And even though the whole ground was shifting because the plane was either pulling away or coming in, that box or that crosshair was kind of locked on to, you know, what they were aiming at. That's a military targeting technology using cameras and software, and was developed by Mobileye. And it wasn't called Mobileye then, but it's the same company, Israeli company. And they now offer a safe system for accident avoidance for cars. And their very first customer was BMW. So when you see television commercials that talk about people stopping automatically when a tree falls in front of them or drifting out of their lane and being jarred back, you know, you see these commercials all the time. Nissan has a commercial where there's an accident or something happens ahead, and it says, you know, Nissan can stop even when you don't know what's happening up ahead. You know, this is all Mobileye. The only company that doesn't use Mobileye in the world is Mercedes-Benz. Mercedes makes their own proprietary anti-accident system, but every other car, I mean every other manufacturer on the planet that uses accident avoidance systems uses systems that are made by Mobileye. They're called a Tier 2 manufacturer. In other words, they manufacture a product that goes into the OEs. They also make an aftermarket system, which is what we have on screen. So the system is basically this unit here is a camera. It gets mounted on the windshield and looks down the road. And then there's a box, black box you don't see, and that's plugged into your vehicle's computer system so it knows how fast the car is going. And then you have what they call the iWatch display. This is mounted on the dashboard, and this gives the driver information. So it monitors a few things. What the system does, it recognizes vehicles, pedestrians, motorcycles, bicyclists, and this is all built into a software algorithm. Analyzes what's going on and warns the driver. So here's what we do. Camera mounts on the windshield, mounts on the dash, monitors your following distance. It knows how fast your car's going. It can identify a vehicle in front of you. It can measure the distance, therefore. It can see if you are getting closer, further, and how fast that's happening. So, given this recommendation of 1 second per every 10 miles per hour, it'll begin to notify you if your car starts to creep what they would call an unsafe distance. And that is, you can disable that, like in stop and go driving, the thing would be going off all the time. You can easily turn it off. But the idea is to keep a driver from getting into a situation by following too closely to a car in front. Warns of an imminent collision. So if a device sees that distance all of a sudden is starting to close quickly because something in front of you has stopped, then it will give you a loud, strong alert. Remember we talked about that 1 second notice. This will actually give you about a 2.5 to 3 second advance warning to get on the brakes and get your car stopped. Now, I don't think there's one person in this room that hasn't been in a situation at least one time that you've done something in your car for a sec, just a second, and you look up and all of a sudden it's like, oh, there's something stopped in front of you, and you slam the brakes on, and you just barely escaped crashing into someone in front of you. Well, if you had a full second warning or 2 seconds warning, that stuff wouldn't happen. And so they estimate they can avoid about 80% of rear-end collisions just by having this device in the car. Most of their customers are large-scale fleet companies. FedEx, I see the soft drink trucks. They just did, I can't remember, another big large fleet operation. Because if you're a business and you just bump somebody, the person you bumped, once they realize you're a business, and a lot of the lawsuits start. And the average, what most companies do is rather than go to court, they'll settle. And the average settlement to make somebody go away is $15,000. And every commercial vehicle tends to hit somebody average of once per year. So if they can install a Mobileye device for $1,200 one time and save $15,000 a year on that vehicle year in and year out, it makes money sense to them. But we're talking here our lives, not money. But that's why this really, really works well. I'm sure nobody in this room ever goes to Las Vegas. But if you go to Las Vegas and you're in a taxi cab, you're often going to hear like ding, 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 ding. Every cab in Las Vegas mandated to have a Mobileye device to eliminate accidents as much as possible. So the other thing it does, it provides you an audible and visual warning if the car begins to drift out of its lane. Well, how does it do that? Well, I told you it's software and algorithm based. So the camera looks down the road. It is identifying the lane edges. It's identifying what's a car, what's not a car, what car's next to you, what car's in front of you. And this is all in the software of the device, and therefore, it will know if your car is beginning to drift. How does it know if it's drifting? Because there's no turn signal. If you put your turn signal on, it's assuming that you want to move lanes. But if there's no turn signal and you start to drift, it'll give you a da-da-da-da-da-da-da, like, kind of like driving over the bumps in the road, the dots. And you can even have a device added to your seat frame, so it'll vibrate your seat. Okay, so this is what Mobileye does. Because it's looking forward and can see things, it'll identify if you have your high beams on and an oncoming car is coming. At the appropriate time, it'll dim your high beams for you. And then after the car passes, it'll raise it back up. This is kind of an icing on the cupcake. It's not really what it's meant to do, but it can, so it does. So that's what Mobileye does. So it's an accident avoidance system. And it's the same one exactly that's on every other car in the world except for Mercedes. Yeah. Great. So, if you're a manufacturer, like Volvo, for example, who was the first company to do what you're saying, the question was, what about automatic braking? Volvo has a Mobileye system built into the car, and that system is providing data to the car's computer, and the car's computer has been programmed to put on the brakes so you don't hit what's in front of you. Aftermarket-wise, we can't do that. This is strictly aftermarket, strictly a warning system. If you're a car manufacturer, you can automatically apply brakes. You can automatically slow the car. You can do whatever you want to do. It's all computer controlled. Everybody knows that now. So Mobileye provides the data, And the car's computer provides the what it wants to do with the data. In our case, it's just warning. That's all we can do. So that's what it looks like. I mean, in this particular case, it's 2.5 seconds behind the car in front of it. It's a green showing that everything's okay. If the car were to creep up on that car, the 2.5 might drop down to 2.0 to 1.8 seconds, and then the car would go to orange, the display there, right here, and then it would finally go to red if you're really too close. So this is a visual. You know, if you're driving down the road and you see green over here on your dashboard, you know, everything's great. You see red, that's a warning. So that's what Mobileye looks like, you know, installed in a car.
I have a question.
Yo.
According to the last top sentence there, my understanding of the CPC California Vehicle Code, all devices must be at the lower left 49 square inches of the windshield.
Yeah, that's correct. So, well, you're right. This isn't actually mounted on the windshield. This is mounted further back on the dashboard.
The last sentence is at the top of the windshield.
Well, oh no, okay. You're right and you're wrong. So yeah, if you're going to do a device like a smartphone or navigation system, whatever, if you mount that in the center of your windshield, which is kind of where people think, that can actually block out quite a bit of visual area. So those have to be down in the lower left-hand corner of the windshield. It was exactly what you said. These devices are mounted on the top of the windshield where you don't see them. So, you know, these are right on the top. So these are completely legal. It's exactly the way it's supposed to be. These are mounted on the top. I don't have a picture of it installed. Let me go backwards. Okay, so this piece right here is only about that big. It's very small. And it actually goes on the very top by the headliner and is adhered to the window and looks out high. So it's not in your vision at all. As a matter of fact, from a driver's point of view, it's actually hidden behind the rearview mirror. You don't even see it. So this is exactly the way it's supposed to be, and your point's well taken, but it's not the same thing as having a GPS device or a phone mounted on your windshield. I'm sorry? Installed price, about $1,200. So then the question is, how much is a life worth? So with that, you can stick a fork in me because I'm done. And we talked about the connected car. We talked about things we can do to make your car safer to drive. And now open up for questions, and I'm good to go. Yeah, Roger.
Okay, what have you got for parking? I can't park for the driver. Don't say anything yet. Let me finish. Way back when, 50.
Don't say curb feelers.
Just break the
curb. Yeah, right. Listen, thank goodness some things don't change because they still make curb feelers and you can still buy them at Pep Boys or various other places. Oh, yeah, they're out there. You can buy them on Amazon. Yeah, to the best of my knowledge, and I've been doing this for a long time, I've never seen an electronic device that will give you warning on a curb. Never. Now, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Someone might prove me wrong, but I've never seen it. But I think you can still buy curb feelers. Go buy them. I think they're still available, yeah. Yep.
I have one that I'll sell you that I bought last year. Where at? Where
did you buy it?
You can buy it. I bought mine online. I was teaching my girlfriend
to
drive. I can call them. They're all over the internet.
Yeah, I'd be really surprised if you didn't Google curb feelers.
How about the front and rear bumpers?
Yeah, so front and rear bumpers, we sell a reverse camera. We talked about that.
Down?
Well, okay. So we do have, actually, the question Roger had was, you know, what about some kind of a sensor for the front bumpers? The rear bumpers have the parking discs. We also have those for the front. So same thing. It's an ultrasonic system. It warns you if you're about to hit something. And there's actually one specialized sensor that will warn you if you're about to hit one of the curb bumpers that they put in the parking spaces. So if you have a low car that could be damaged, that will give you a warning. So. Anything else? Yep. You're talking about, so you can't hear it from the camera? So you can actually purchase commercial-grade cameras, which are not as pretty, that have a microphone so you can hear too. But all the ones that are sold with the antenna reverse safety cameras do not have microphones. They're just visual. There you go. $19 on Amazon for curb feelers. Old technology, but it works. Yep, see ya. It's usually about an hour to put them in, so depending on the shop, it could be anywhere from, you know, $80 to $120. We tend to be more on the $120 side in our stores. So, of course, I'm going to recommend Al and Ed's Auto Sound, but I said, of course, I'm going to recommend Al and Ed's Auto Sound, but any car stereo shop will be able to do this. I mean, it's very common. It's not technology that's a secret. Everybody knows about it, so. You can buy the camera online. I tend to always try to buy electronics, talking to somebody and being able to see them. It's hard to buy cameras online. You can see a picture of the camera, but you don't really know what it's going to look like. You can actually go into a store and see what the resolution of the camera is going to be. I'd rather do it in a store.
So like Best Buy or
Best Buy, Allen Ed's Auto Sound, Joe Blow Car Stereo, any of those places. But see, the thing is on the cameras, for example, there's different resolutions, there's different types of image sensors. You can get CMOS or CCD or HD, different lines of resolution. So you can buy a $99 camera from one manufacturer and buy a $99 camera from another manufacturer that will be superior. Just, there's not much price difference. You know, the low to high is $100 to $150. Now online, you're going to find some $29, $39 cameras. Those are the ones they put in IKEA. They're terrible. But you want something that's going to work. It's going to be, so you're in the $100 to $150 range. So, blind spot systems are relatively expensive. They're going to be, again, you know, I hate to keep throwing $1,000 out, about $1,000 installed to get a blind spot detection system. So, for people that want to have their car to be as safe as a newer car, there's money you have to put into it, but it can be done. Well, the brands that we sell are a company called Rydeen. Rydeen Mobile, and also a company called Brand Motion. Now, Brand Motion is actually and Rostra Precision Controls, which sounds like a weird name, but they're actually a Tier 1 and Tier 2 supplier. They make the product for the OEs. So if you buy a product from Rostra, you're actually buying the Toyota product that comes on Toyota. It's the exact same sensor, but they're all pretty good quality.
One last question. We're running out of time.
One last question, or I'm out of time. Yeah, go ahead. So the question is, what about just adding, you know, you can buy from the auto parts store like a convex mirror that you stick on your mirror. That actually is probably the most rudimentary blind spot detection system. But I think that's definitely, and by the way, some car manufacturers actually have that as an option, you know, on the mirrors. But I think the backup the sensors themselves are going to be more accurate for you. So, listen, thank you everybody. It was good. Good
questions
tonight. Appreciate it.